Secondhand News by Chai Chak, read by Cookie Mom 6067. Chapter 1. Healer Serene adjusts his bag in a way that could be mistaken for nervousness if you somehow missed his upswept brow, pointed ears, and the distinctive uniform of the Vulcan Medical Science Corps that he is wearing as he completes the decompression cycle from the shuttle Charon, as it prepares to drop him off onto the USS Enterprise. The door opens and he steps out promptly and takes in his surroundings. The flagship of the Federation's silhouette is known to most of its citizens, but the inside is momentarily impressive. It is large and sleek, well lit, but has a sense of architectural thought that you would not necessarily think humans would put into their military assets. A Vulcan must have been involved, he thinks, as he sweeps his eyes across the room. All this takes a mere second thanks to his Vulcan brain, and he manages to keep his eyebrows in a neutral position as he takes his first step down to meet the welcoming committee. There is a dark-skinned man waiting for him who raises his hand to him genially. "Healer Serene," the man says. "I am Chief Medical Officer Dr. Joseph Mbenga." He has a pleasant voice, and his hand fans out into an acceptable to all, and Serene responds in kind. "Welcome to the Enterprise," Dr. Mbenga says. "This is my acting head nurse, Tashi Arkachan." A slim woman with the complexion of oversimmered plomeek soup nods to him and smiles. "Greetings," Serene replies. He raises his hand into a perfect to all and draws upon the speech he had prepared for this occasion. "I am welcomed to your ship. I am grateful for the opportunity to seize the Federation flagship." Mbenga's chin raises in surprise, and his eyes narrow very slightly as he parses the sentence. "Is your universal translator working, Healer Serene?" he asks in heavily accented Vulcanese. Serene inclines his head in subtle relief before replying in kind. "Installation of a translation matrix is contraindicated due to an existing medical condition," he explains. "I have not used my skill in Federation standards since I was a child. Thankfully, the Vulcan eidetic memory means that I have retained the lessons of my youth. All I require is practice. I hope you will forgive any mistakes I make in the meantime." Mbenga's face splits open wide, and Serene almost has an emotional outburst himself as Mbenga laughs loudly in that horrifying human way. "Oh, this will be fun," he says, and holds out his hand towards the hallway. "Let me introduce you to our security chief, who can supply you with a communicator with a translation matrix, and then I'll show you to your rooms." "Thank you, doctor," Serene carefully states in standard. And the first hurdle cleared, walks briskly into the brightly lit hallway, remembering to draw his confidence around him like a set of meditation robes to hold his nerve. The security chief of the Enterprise is a small woman who speaks terrible Golic Vulcan with a Tellarite accent of all things. But between her, the doctor, and the communicator, they manage to get through the ship's induction process with only minor issues. The slight delay gives him a headache, which he mentions. He has heard that humans prefer honesty around these things. "Will this be a problem, doctor?" the security chief asks after Mbenga begins his scan. "Sickbay has acoustic translation incorporated into the biobed matrices," Mbenga explains. "Disabling translators is routine, especially if there is a head injury involved, which, as you know very well, is a common occurrence around here. So it won't affect his job, and that Vulcan eidetic memory should mean that by the end of the week he'll be out conjugating us all." The security chief nods and signs off the language section of the orientation checklist, which lights up and plays a little tune to indicate that he has completed his induction. She hands Serene a small golden device and shows him how it works. "You'll get the flick of the wrist pretty fast," she says, "but try not to force it. The hinges are strong, but not Vulcan strong, if you understand." Serene accepts the device with the tips of his fingers and places the communicator in the pocket of his robes. "Last thing, do you have any personal electronics?" the security chief asks. They are permitted. We just need to implement a patch to allow for them to join the network. Starfleet's data security is pretty serious. You won't get very far without it. I do not, Serene says, and the security chief nods. In which case, I welcome you to the Enterprise, Mr. Serene. I hope your stay is edifying and educational, and I am sure I will see you in sickbay soon. Thank you, he says, and they move on. Serene is led to his quarters on Deck 12, and then Mbenga leaves him to his own devices. He seems to want to come in, but thankfully for them both, there is a call for him over the intercom, and so with a final superfluous see you tomorrow, Mbenga runs off, leaving Serene to his own thoughts. His quarters are spacious and thoughtfully already set to Vulcan presets. The air is warm and dry, and the light is even set to the frequency that reflects his region of origin. He wastes no time in changing out of the sleek, pale robes of the VMSC, but then realizes he is not sure what he should change into next. Computer, he calls out, and a pleasant female voice replies, awaiting command input, the computer says. I have been transferred to Starfleet from the Vulcan Medical Scientific Corps. I am expected to perform to the standards of a Starfleet officer. What am I required to wear while I am performing my duties? The computer chimes acknowledgement. All Starfleet officers must wear the standard uniform for their division, with rank insignia while on duty. Off-duty officers can wear civilian clothes. In special circumstances, additional or alternate uniforms may be worn. More information is available in the Uniform Code Guidelines, 2259 edition. Would you like to hear more? Where am I to find this uniform? Serene asks. Your uniform has been assigned by the quartermaster, the computer explains. It will be located in the second and third drawers of the unit directly ahead of you. Serene opens the drawers and indeed finds five sets of identical outfits neatly pressed and laid out. In the top smaller drawers, he finds underwear and socks, and after querying the computer, finds a pair of boots in the closet. All appear to be his size and cut in a way that would not need additional tailoring. Interesting. He lays the full set out on the bed and inspects it. It is a novelty. He has never worn human-style clothes before, and it takes him a moment and another query to the computer to understand the correct order in which to put them on his body. The trousers are short, several centimeters higher than any self-respecting Vulcan would ever wear them, and the socks are strange foot coverings that are restrictive on his toes in a way he finds distasteful. But the boots, at least, are high quality, the equal of anything you can find in Shikar's most fashionable districts. Serene has to admit that despite his Vulcan recalcitrance, once on, the close fit of the pale blue shirt is not as uncomfortable as it looks. He cannot avoid the fact that it is almost scandalous how revealing it is by Vulcan standards. It gives him a thrill as it hugs his body, and he can feel the way it cups his pectoral muscles almost like a lover. But the fabric has significant tensile strength as well as flexibility. He looks at himself in the mirror and raises an eyebrow in a moment of emotional indulgence. He does look impressive. He smooths his braids down against his head and straightens his collar. Computer, confirm identity and readiness for duty, he asks the bulkhead, and the answering voice chirps approval. Assessing. Healer Serene, Provisional Rank Ensign, Medical Science Division, Mental Health Directorate, on training sabbatical from the Vulcan Medical Science Corps covering Counselor Jalita's maternity leave. Uniform is correct. Equipment is correct. You have a meeting in sickbay in 10 minutes. Leaving now, you will arrive with a 3-minute buffer time. Directions can be provided if required. My appreciations, computer, Serene says, and picking up his communicator leaves his quarters, following the lights as they ripple along the walls just for him. I was surprised to receive your application, Healer Serene, Mbenga says, after the curious human addiction of exchanging pleasantries is again satisfied. You are overqualified for the role, but I know that Vulcans do not apply for opportunities without good reason. What attracted you to come and work with us? Serene pulls his issued pad out of his satchel and places it on the table. It was logical. I am a citizen of the Federation, and yet my training at VMSC has been focused only on Vulcans, despite the fact that we make up only 13% of the population of the Federation at large. There is debate within the medical societies of Vulcan as to whether psychic healers are needed by non-psychic races. I was undertaking a debate with a peer, a Tellarite doctor, Dr. Claxton, who sent me this paper to prove to me that I needed to expand my horizons, as he put it. Mbenga pulls the pad to himself and raises an eyebrow. Embargoed for internal Starfleet medical publication only, Starfleet Journal of Interspecies Medicine, Volume 88, Issue 2. L. H. McCoy, J. G. J. Mbenga, and C. E. Chapel, 2260. Case report of improperly broken Vulcan mating bond in Sinal human male. 1. USS Farragut, 2. USS Enterprise. Patient X is a 26-year-old human male in good overall health. Patient Y is a 29-year-old male of hybrid Vulcan heritage, also in good health. Both presented to sickbay with neuropsychic-related trauma at 0300 hours, with X already in late-stage organ failure and cardiac arrest, and Y in late-stage 4 emotional cascade. Patients had been given a clean bill of health 6 hours earlier as part of routine post-mission procedures. Patients had an established but unregistered psychic bond, which was deemed by both to be surplus to requirements. Patient Y performed neuropsychological surgery on himself and patient X in patient Y's quarters using an adapted, widely taught method for psychic hygiene. See forthcoming manuscript 1. Breaking of the bond was described as disproportionately easy, and symptoms took approximately 3 hours to fully develop. Treatment with cortisone and rhesus was sufficient to restart patient X's heart, but insufficient to halt the degeneration of his other organ systems. Surgery was performed on two fronts, organ repair and neuro repair, and the patient responded well to biobed protocols. Initially, patient X stabilized but later developed several allergies. See forthcoming manuscript 2. Neuro repair was performed using an expired Neuralink 2, expiration date November 2256, retrieved from the personal collection of author B. Despite warnings, the repair was completed successfully. Paper on impact of out-of-date medical equipment and proprietary formats forthcoming March 2260. Patient Y required multiple rounds of neurotreatment followed by a Vulcan healing trance. Protocols for healing trance are out of date and should be updated. However, coordination with VSA and VSMC will be required. Both patients made a full recovery, but will be monitored for long-term impact of the accident and subsequent treatment. I believe Dr. Claxton was right, and so I presented this paper to my superiors as part of my funding application for further research. However, my superiors stated that this was a single case report and proved nothing. I disagreed. I see, Mbenga says, turning to his computer and clicking on some records that Serene cannot see. He nevertheless continues. It was Dr. Claxton who alerted me to the opportunity with you here on the Enterprise, and considering my opportunities on Vulcan seem to be limited, it was logical that I apply. You are aware that you applied for a mental health position? Mbenga says, frowning. This is not a neurorehabilitation placement. I apologize for being unclear, Serene says. I am aware of this. While I am an expert in the Vulcan healing trance, I have been a qualified non-invasive mental healer for 6 years and have certification in all core treatment modalities endorsed and prescribed by Starfleet Medical for treatment of active service individuals. The majority of mental health treatment on Vulcan is non-invasive. My interest in invasive methods and neurorehabilitation are nascent, and I wish to gain a wider perspective. My interest in this position was to gain a wider experience with Federation races other than Vulcans. I apologize, Mbenga says. I did know that. He turns his chair and steeples his fingers, frowning. We've had a lot of interest since we published the abstract, far more than we expected. It has been a bit surprising, is all. We aren't really sure where it is coming from. Nevertheless, once I saw your application, I knew that we had to have you. This is a busy ship, and we cannot really afford to be without a counselor. And no one even knew July was pregnant until she was in full labor, and then we were knee-deep in kittens and without anyone to look after the crew's psyche. The captain and Starfleet Medical gave me discretion in appointing someone, since the role was so short-term, so thank you. I believe that you'll be a great fit here. Why don't I introduce you to the team? The introductions take a long time. Serene is used to working in a large city hospital, but his department has always been logically small, and due to Vulcan privacy norms, clinically isolated. Starfleet, by comparison, runs what it calls a medically integrated mental health care model, which means that every member of the crew receives routine mental health care alongside their physical care. Mental health problems on Vulcan are common, of course, but the first-line treatment has always involved refreshing of logic and shielding. It is only the truly exceptional cases that will be presented to a hospital team. Serene is eventually shown to his office, which is at least significantly shielded from the open rows of biobeds by a plant and screen. Any disappointment is illogical, considering the alternative. The biobeds do not even have privacy screens or sound protection, which on Vulcan would be considered a gross violation of medical privacy. The office is cool and clean, with soft lighting in welcome contrast to the bright white of sickbay. But by the decoration, this very much was a Cation office before assigned to him. He makes a mental note of what he will need to be comfortable and then lets himself be guided on. The rest of the crew return to their work, telling Serene that they will see him the next day for something called induction. This dismissal is logical. There are patients to see, and so Serene leaves the bright lights of sickbay with no real purpose. It is becoming the ship's evening hours, and so he inquires to a passing yeoman where food is partaken. The mess, he is told. And then when he asks where the mess is located, the ensign waves a pat at him. I've got places to be. Just ask the computer, he is told. And then the yeoman bustles off at high speed. Computer, Serene asks. A melodious tone chimes. Please state the nature of your query, a synthesized voice calls. I wish to partake of the evening meal in the mess. Please, can you provide directions? Thank you. Please follow the lights on the bulkheads. And sure enough, the way lights up. He walks approximately 10 paces, and then the computer chimes again. You have now arrived at your destination. Serene looks at the three doors that separate sickbay and the mess, confused. But the doors open, and he decides to accept this as a strange human cultural practice, and goes in to find something to eat. The food synthesizer is simple enough. The model is similar to one that was on the campus when he was undertaking his medical training. It has an impressive selection of Vulcan foods, and although he believes in expanding his horizons, he chooses plomeek soup. The computer recommends he add a flatbread to it, and despite the extravagance, he accepts its recommendation. The room is busy, and there are no single dining spaces available. The crew eats at communal tables of eight or more, with significant turnover of persons from seats as they finish their meals. He notices a space open up and heads over. May I sit here? He asks a group of lieutenants in red uniforms. A look passes between the lieutenants, and then a woman in the chair opposite pulls a chair out for him. Sure, take a seat. You're the new medic, right? Serene sits and places his tray on the table. Indeed, I am Serene, son of Sonak. Nice to meet you, Serene, the woman says. What are you eating there? It is plomeek soup and flatbread, a Vulcan dish. The woman looks interested. I'm intrigued to find what you think of it. It's a controversial item on the menu. Serene picks up the spoon and gently skims the surface. The pale pink liquid is thin for plomeek, but there are regional varieties he has not tried. The squares of the plomeek root are visible through the murky liquid. Properly prepared plomeek is simmered long and slow so as not to fully break down the telepathic rhizomes, which make it a delicacy, but no Vulcan would ever expect to sense soup that comes from a replicator. He takes a spoonful, delicately sips it, and swallows after a polite period of tasting. That is the worst plomeek soup I have ever tasted, he says. He coughs slightly and picks up the flatbread so as to try and clear the taste from his mouth. This is also not authentic. The woman laughs and shrugs. Welcome to military food. Don't take it personally. They mess up human food, too. You should have seen the time they tried to put empanadas on as a special. I think half the human crew threatened to mutiny. Serene stirs the soup and now, feeling vaguely nauseous, puts his spoon down. Is there anything you would recommend? This is an abomination. Strong words, the woman says, and then picks up a spare spoon and offers him a bite of her meal. Try this. It's not got any meat in it. He takes it, and the flavor is spicy and warm, with the correct level of salt to enhance the other flavors. The flavors are unfamiliar, but not unpleasant. I would like this. What should I order? It's called chili sin carne. It should be near the top of the popular options. Get the rice, don't get the guacamole, and for the love of the nacelles, deselect the corn. How they make corn gummy is a crime. Serene thanks her and returns his tray to the recycler. He does a double take when he realizes the crew member supervising the tray return is the yeoman he had met in the corridor and asked to supply him with directions to the mess. Ordering his meal, he is careful to remove the corn and add the rice, and the meal that is dispensed looks positively appetizing, though he had given the plomeek the benefit of the doubt. When he returns to the same table to ask for approval, the woman who he had been talking to has already left. In her place is a man in a blue shirt with a bright orange beard troubling his face. He is eating a lurid blue stew that has stained his teeth when he smiles at Serene and invites him to sit down. It's a good choice, the man says when Serene asks whether his dinner is sufficient. You're smart not to go for the Vulcan options. I can't believe they haven't removed them, seeing how much Spock has complained. Rumor is he's been attempting to hack the system, but hasn't had much luck. Serene is temporarily silenced by the large bite of food he has taken, and by the time he has swallowed, the man, Ensign Morrison, has moved the conversation on, engaging with a woman who has taken the seat to Serene's right. The woman is also a member of the medical staff, who he had yet to meet, as today was her day off, she explains. I'm so excited to have you join us, she exclaims. She raises her eyebrows at Ensign Morrison, who rolls his eyes. The woman has long black hair, and a piece is obviously bothering her as she twirls it around her finger as she begins to ask Serene questions. She is very enthusiastic, asking so many questions, he is incapable of both answering them and eating at a rate that would preserve the temperature of his meal. After the third awkward silence, as Serene chews as fast as he can and consequently almost chokes, the woman touches his arm. I'm sorry, she says. Why don't we have a game of chess when you're finished? I'm just getting in the way. She goes back to speaking to Ensign Morrison, whose entire mouth, including his lips and part of his beard, has now turned blue, and Serene manages to finish his dinner in silence. Once finished, the woman, who finally introduces herself to him as a surgical nurse called Han, invites him over to the recreational corner. They get a pair of armchairs, and Serene is surprised that he sinks into the seat far more than he should be normal. I believe this chair is malfunctioning, he tells Nurse Han, who giggles. It's supposed to do that. But why don't you grab us a game? And then we could really get to know one another. Serene struggles back to his feet and proceeds to the pile of games. Most are alien to him, and with the time difference between the ship and Vulcan, he wishes for something he already knows how to play. There are multiple pairs of crew playing chess, and so the number of available sets is low. The first three he checks have missing pieces, and he considers putting together a complete set from them, but then he spies a set on a high shelf. Most of the crew would not be able to reach it, and while Vulcans are tall, Serene is especially tall for his age, sex, and species. He manages to bring the set down and then realizes that a hush has descended over the playing groups, and all heads have turned to stare at him. A man in yellow jumps to his feet and takes it out of his hands. "Sorry, we don't use that set anymore." "Why?" Serene asks. The man looks conflicted and drops his voice to a conspiratorial whisper. "We only just got it back from Spock's quarters. It's his and Kirk's set, if you get what I'm saying." Serene just looks at him. The man stares at him for a long moment, then tightens his lips and carefully places the set back on the shelf. "Sorry," he says, and returns to his game. Serene returns to Nurse Han empty-handed. "My apologies. I believe I will retire to bed. It has been a long day." "Sure," Nurse Han says. "Maybe another time." But she's looking at someone else as she says it, and her hand has returned to twirling a piece of hair around her finger. And when she doesn't say anything else, Serene just leaves. It takes him more time than he expects to find his quarters. The ship is larger than he had considered, and there are far more humans than he had been prepared for. But the computer has been helpful at guiding him after three crew members had led him astray. Removing his boots, he unrolls his meditation mat but does not begin his meditation practice immediately. Instead, he takes a seat on the bed and from a hidden compartment of his luggage pulls out his personal pad. While he had lied to the security chief, he had not lied to Dr. Mbenga, he reflects, as he logs into the ComNet with a bypass program he had downloaded prior to arriving on the ship. He had learned of the position thanks to a debate with Dr. Claxton, and he was more than qualified for the role and would rise to the occasion and use this to move his career forward. The motivations of why exactly he had applied for the role are his own personal business, nothing more. As he logs into the AQ Spock Watching node, the software automatically opens up the last thread he was reading before he powered down the device at the Shikar Space Terminal. Thread. Strange abstract published to the internal Starfleet medical feed. Could this be Spock and JTK? Would explain a lot. Flicking over to his communication app, he rejoins the private group discussion where his compatriots were having a discussion regarding the day's news. User Soraka Vulcan has entered the chat. User Soraka Vulcan, I have arrived. I have completed my induction on the Enterprise and will begin my rotation tomorrow at 0600. User Restore Fragments, amazing! User Dr. Claxton, you mad bastard, you did it. User JTK is gay 69, I can't believe it. User Kabanana Toadie, Star Eyes, Star Eyes, Star Eyes, Star Eyes, Star Eyes, Star Eyes. User Dr. Claxton, and now to enact the next phase of our master plan. Prepare the seeds, Mr. User JTK is gay 69. Mr. User Soraka Vulcan is off to the garden. User Soraka Vulcan, we'll report back in time. LLAP to all. AQ Spock Watching. Thread. A report of my first day on the USS Enterprise, user Sirach of Vulcan. I have recently had the opportunity to take a secondment role on the USS Enterprise. As a Spock watcher of many years, it has been invigorating to walk the halls that Spock himself has walked. The flagship of the Federation is an impressive vehicle, and visiting has reminded me of the threats that are extant against our way of life. My first day was uneventful. I am here to work, and as a member of the military, there are forms and procedures to follow. Nevertheless, I have already consumed dinner in the port galley on Deck 4, which was the site of the first meeting of Spock and JTK. a member of the staff directed me away from using a specific chess set as it was earmarked for their exclusive use and had recently been located in Spock's quarters. It is invigorating to be surrounded by people who understand the significance of the relationship that has caused our numbers to swell so significantly over the last few months, even though neither party is currently on the ship. There is little else for me to relay. While it is unlikely that I will do daily updates due to the nature of my job, I will endeavor to do a recap of my week and the things I have experienced, particularly those that are of interest to the wider Spock-watching community. Live long and prosper, Sirach of Vulcan. Chapter 2. Sorin meditates for a few hours, and then, still feeling the pressures of the day of travel and subterfuge, decides to sleep for a few more. To his distress, however, he is awoken for the first time in his life by an unpleasantly loud sound. Blearily, he looks around. He had been briefed on how to act during a red alert, but the walls of the room are dark. "Computer, what is that noise?" he commands. The computer's voice is soft and calm despite the cacophony. An 0500 alarm was set automatically for your 0600 shift start time. Do you wish to snooze or stop? Serene has never heard the term snooze before in his life. Please stop the noise, computer. Thank you. Affirmative. Good morning, Ensign Serene. Good morning, computer. Serene completes his morning ablutions with only a small amount of help from the computer and then dresses in his Starfleet uniform for the day's work and resists the urge to check his comm for moral support. It had been Claxton's big idea, and the plan was ingenious in its simplicity. The role had been advertised outside of Starfleet, which indicated they were having problems filling it. It was a short-term maternity cover for 12 weeks, at the lowest level of medical professional, but the skills required were extremely specialized, and it was no wonder they were having problems finding someone. There were discussions happening on several of the private servers, but it was word of mouth that had Claxton approaching Serene through direct messaging. It was a simple operation. He wasn't to engage with Spock or Kirk. He was there just to see, just to look, and to plant something they referred to as the seed. It was all above board, apparently, and the inventor of the seed was a member of Starfleet Technical Operations. The Enterprise is a deep space ship, and so its crew, even the notoriously gossipy Yeoman Corps, are disconnected from the wider comnet for most of the year. All this was to do was to boost the communications enough that the flow of gossip could be restored. Serene is not a stupid man, but he is also not a technically minded one. He had always received low grades and had struggled to reach minimum computer technical expertise levels to graduate, although since the advent of the voice-assisted computers, he had increased his capability dramatically. When he had asked whether this was a nefarious scheme, the developer of the seed had sent him a long and complicated description of the reasons and means for why it was not possible for him to do it, which had been so technical it had made Serene uncomfortable, not for its technicality, but for the fact he felt like the man was lying to him. He almost questioned it, but then there was a thread on one of the forums about how the assumption that humans are lying, duplicitous, and manipulative is racial stereotyping and therefore illogical. It was a sober reminder that he has limited experience dealing with humans and that he should trust in Sirach's teachings. He could log into the comnet now, ask for the seed, and then upload it right here in the comfort of his quarters. Then it would be easy to fabricate an emergency. He is near enough that it would be a short detour to return him to a starbase. And would any of the crew remember him after a week? The counselor would be back in 12 weeks. It would be a mere inconvenience for them to be without one for such a short time. He almost does it, but then the computer chimes that it is time for him to leave, and so Serene puts the pad away in a safe place and leaves for his morning's duties. When he arrives at sickbay, it is in time for the morning briefing for the start of shift. Serene takes a seat and listens politely to the handover discussion before Mbenga coughs and formally introduces him to the morning crew. This is Healer Serene. He is Jelly's short-term maternity cover. He's not seeing patients until Friday, as there's been an issue with the transfer of his credentials from the BSA. But you all know how fast things move when they want to, so let's get him a nice full list for Friday morning, okay? Any emergencies? True emergencies, mind you. Not uppity officers who don't want to wait. Bring them to me and we'll work something out. Serene is momentarily disappointed. But it turns out that there are so many trainings that need to be completed that he wouldn't have had much time to actually see any patients before the day after next anyway. In fact, as soon as the meeting ends, Serene is hustled into a side room by the nurse on duty for a lecture on bureaucracy. It's bureaucracy, but it's honest bureaucracy, Nurse Jacinta Volta says to him as she busies her hands, moving his hypospray from hand to hand. She had introduced herself as his buddy, which turned out to be another layer of Starfleet induction that made his head hurt. I mean, most of this job is just showing you where the toilets are. They're really keen on that. I mean, they can be quite hard to spot, she concedes, but mostly the rules of this are the same as any other organization. Do your job, try not to gossip in public areas, get involved in ship events as much as you are able, and try not to get tangled up with the yeomen. Even if it seems like they're having more fun, they aren't. The grass always seems greener on the lower decks. I did not know that there were multiple botanical areas on the ship, Serene says politely. Be reassured, though, Nurse Volta. As a Vulcan, fun is not part of my hierarchy of needs, Serene states, and Jacinta sighs. Ugh, jealous. I'd get so much more done if I wasn't, like, constantly distracted. I'm such a neophile, you know? This place is too exciting. Do you get what I'm saying? Serene thinks about it. I do understand your meaning. And he is about to discuss treatments for human inattentive disorders when she cuts him off. Cool. Well, let me know if you need anything else. I think Dr. M said you should review some of the ongoing psychological files. You'll be seeing patients from the end of the week, as long as everything goes well. Oh, we use Earth weeks here. That throws people off sometimes, since it's more of an enterprise cultural quirk than standard practice across the fleet. It's currently Tuesday. That's the second day of the week. Your first patient is on Friday morning, which is in 3 days' time. Or 2 days. Depends how you count it, I guess. Serene is prevented from interrogating how the nurse had completed her medical studies without being able to count by an insistent voice shouting over the medical hum. Mr. Serene? I'm looking for a Mr. Serene. He's here, Kyle, Nurse Volta says, waving her arms above her head. I'll hand you over to Kyle. He's mean, but don't let that get in your way. It's just because he likes them tall, dark, and handsome. Have fun. Serene is surprised, but reassures himself that the signs are all there that the nurse must have a degenerative brain disease to have already forgotten about their discussion about the illogical nature of fun, coupled with her admission that she cannot do basic mathematics or place herself temporally within a standard week. Perhaps Mbenga would let him scan her brain and also inquire about how they effectively incorporate the mentally disabled into the military. He makes a note to begin a research proposal when he has a spare moment and then goes to meet the man that they call Kyle. Kyle is a tiny man, even by human standards, but he holds himself like he has a meter on Serene, who is above average even for a Vulcan. Kyle looks at him from top to toe, then looks side to side as if playing to an invisible audience, before shaking his head and jerking his head at Serene to follow him. Nice to meet you, he says in that tedious human way, but then thankfully gets straight to his point. This is the orientation tour. I'll show you the way around the ship, teach you the internal ship's logic, the key and forbidden areas, and as long as there are no questions, then we can get back to our jobs. Sound good? He doesn't wait for an answer and instead steps off briskly towards the door. The logic of the ship makes sense once Kyle explains it. Enterprise is a Constitution-class ship. She has 22 decks, And while there is officially no delineation, the top 8 decks are considered upper decks and the bottom 14 the lower decks. So you can work out for yourself where you fit based on that. As someone with quarters on deck 18, I couldn't possibly comment. They take the turbo lift down, and Kyle explains their functionality and the logic of the paths that they take through the shafts that bisect the ship. There are 204 crew members following the Starfleet command hierarchy, he continues, as they step out onto deck 13. As a member of the medical cohort, you really don't fit into the main split of command operations sciences. You're kind of a bit of all three, but you'll get used to it. Or you won't. I don't really care. Intriguing, Serene says, more out of politeness than anything. Do you have any questions so far? Kyle asks. Many, Serene says. There are small white boxes on every corner of the hallways. What are they for? Oh, shoot. I haven't done the hand stuff with you yet, Kyle says, then seems to bite his lips hard and close his eyes. There's a long pause. Are you well, Chief Kyle? Serene asks. You appear to be experiencing vasodilation in your face. I'm fine, Kyle replies quickly. Let me show you the, recreation areas. Kyle takes him to the main crew mess and the port galley. There's a starboard galley, but no one who's anyone uses that one. And then pauses and mutters something to himself that even with his Vulcan hearing, Serene cannot make out. You should probably also see the garden, Kyle says nonchalantly. They're ripping it out soon for reasons none of us are sure about. There's a petition you can sign if you want. They rejoin a turbo lift and head down further into the lower decks. Serene keeps his breathing controlled, not that Kyle is paying much attention. They arrive on deck 16 and pass down past the main transporter room towards a large set of cargo doors. There's a guard posted on the door who nods to them. As they pass over the threshold, Serene notices a curious handwritten sign propped up inside the guard's alcove that reads, "Stealing apples is a Federation offense, punishable by death." "I had no idea," Serene says to no one, but then must hustle to catch up with Kyle, who has walked into the center of the garden and is prodding at some bushes with the toe of his boot. "This is fascinating, Chief Kyle," Serene says, "that there could be so much botanical life grown in space. This truly must be what Nurse Volta was talking about." "Whatever Yacinta said, I don't want to hear it," Kyle said hastily. "You can't believe everything she says. Or more, if you want to, you're no better than those people on the comnet." "Pike to Chief Kyle." The communicator saves them from the awkwardness. "Kyle here, Captain. There's an unscheduled transport happening in 5 minutes. Can you please be on hand to welcome Commander Kirk?" "Happily, Captain," Kyle says. "Perfect timing. Let me show you the ropes." He speeds off, missing Serene's very small facial twitch. It is almost undetectable to anyone not an expert in Vulcan facial expressions. But to those in the know, Serene is absolutely losing his shit. The garden is just down the hall from the main transporter room, and the walk takes barely 20 seconds, but they're the longest 20 seconds of Serene's 47-year-long life. How could he be so illogical? They had worked out that the chances of this happening were almost infinitesimal, but Serac teaches that infinitesimal occasions happen every day and to prepare accordingly. That was why Serene even agreed to apply for the job. Of course, he knew that doing this would have a chance of bringing him in connection with someone who he knew from the reports on AQ Spock watching, not to mention from the wider Vulcan Gossip Network. He had not started obsessed with the son of Sarek. It had been a slippery slope. Serene had been born in Shikar's Kartine district, but long before his birth, Sarek and his unconventional family had been the talk of the city, both for his scandalous first family and then his even more scandalous second family, human wife, hybrid son, and his human ward. Serene's parents had been vocal with their disapproval of the family, which in itself was illogical. They were not of the same clan, and they had no business or social connections to the Sichinta guys. They did not even live in the same district. Why his parents were so emotional about someone they did not know made no sense, and it paradoxically had made Serene interested in the family. He always kept a note of the movements of Amanda and Michael, especially, and he had thought it unfair that they were blamed in the press for any small perceived missteps made by the ambassador, most of which were, at best, a difference of opinion, and considering the family had weathered so many storms, understandable. Michael seemed a perfectly respectable young woman who was far more committed to Serac's teachings than most of his peers. Serene finished his schooling and applied to the Vulcan Science Academy to study medicine and was accepted on the first try. He had completed his undergraduate medical studies in Vulcan medicine and then been accepted into his postgraduate studies in non-invasive psychiatry. His interest in the Sechin Tagaya family had been nothing more than reading the occasional article in the news. The stories about Serac's achievements in the Federation Parliament, the respectable early Kazwan of the boy Spock, his engagement to a suitable young girl from a good family, Amanda's fashionable clothing, and of course, the seemingly endless discussion of the girl, Michael. Her apparent failure to live up to the secret wish of Vulcan society that Serac's great experiment would fail. A human could, in fact, live up to Vulcan society's loftiest ideals for its children and thrive besides. Serene had been privately thrilled when he had seen Michael and Amanda touring the VSA campus during his postgraduate studies. He had wished to greet her, but had ultimately decided against it. He did not know them, and it would be of no benefit to either parties to become acquainted. Later, while taking a break to read the internal message system, he had seen a remarkably rude message from someone objecting to humans touring the campus, and he surprised himself when he felt the overwhelming urge to leave the author a very stern reply, chastising him for his illogical response to an inoffensive woman and her mother touring. It had been very scathing, and he had no intention to press send, but then examined himself. His fear was illogical. It was only after pressing send and realizing that his hands were shaking from the exhilaration, he thought to check the author's credentials, and had almost panicked when he realized it was the vice dean of the engineering school. He had sworn then to not get involved again. But once Michael had started her studies, and to many of his colleagues' dismay, had proven herself to be a disciplined and intelligent scientist, he had spent more of his spare time than he should have, having vigorous debates about the nature of IDIC and the racism of low expectations, first within the university, and when after his supervisor had pointed out the illogic of arguing with his peers when he had a long career ahead of him, joining the wider ComNet to share his opinions. By the time the son of Serac had reached majority, and instead of joining the VSA, had gone to Starfleet Academy, Serene was a member of 17 Nodes for Vulcan Gossip, and was known as a terrifying debater, and was rumored to be Spock himself by a significant subpopulation of the gossiping masses. Over time, though, he had put it aside. Both Spock and Michael had disappeared into Starfleet's black box, and the rigors of medical training had redirected his priorities. And for 5 years, he prided himself on only reading the news, right up until the rumors started about the son of Serac having murdered 5 officers. And like an addiction, Serene fell back into the arms of the ComNet and had not yet looked back. Serene was mentally prepared to meet Spock. The others had prepared him, drilled him in human slang for all possible eventualities, but none had thought to prepare him for meeting JTK himself. Serene had learned everything about him with a guilty prurience, especially considering the medical report that had brought him this opportunity, but the man himself, his high forehead, golden skin, his soft, understanding eyes, so luminous even in his unflattering official identity pictures, but completely hypnotic in the candid and press photographs from the gala and beyond, the reports of his valor in the war and his infamous demerits. Serene was not ready. He was not prepared. The Farragut was supposed to be in the Beta Quadrant on assignment almost as far away from where the Enterprise was as it was possible to be within Federation space. It should not be possible. He considers trying to nerve pinch himself to feign a heart problem, but dismisses the idea as insanity. Serac teaches that fear is a friend to invite into the garden for tea. And so Serene steps into the transporter room and prepares to meet his fate. The transporter swirls and deposits a handsome man in command yellow onto the pad. "Commander Kirk, welcome to Enterprise," Chief Kyle smarms. The man on the transporter pad is handsome, with a high forehead and golden skin, but this Commander Kirk is not the soft-eyed hero of the Federation Serene had been nursing a crush on for the last year. This Commander Kirk steps down and scans his identification, and Serene sees his profile light up on the screen from his place behind Kyle's shoulder. Commander George Samuel Kirk, Sr., of Starfleet Veterans Affairs. Some quick mental arithmetic puts him at 58 human years old, and a further read proves that he is listed as the next of kin of both his sons, including the infamous JTK. He is tall, with the good looks of a long-ago matinee idol. His gray hair rivals Captain Pike's for sheer silver magnificence, and he has a trim figure with a ranginess that favors his younger son. "Where is Sam?" the commander barks. "I requested he meet me." At that moment, the door slides open, and a man Serene knows all too well is George Samuel Kirk, Jr., puffs his way into the room. "Sorry I'm late. Dad, great to see you." Serene watches as both Kirks shake hands and swallows around the lump in his throat at the intrusive thought. "That mustache makes you look like a communist," the senior Kirk says, and it does not sound like a compliment. Sam Kirk seems to deflate in disappointment. "Thanks, Dad. The captain has invited you to dinner in his quarters this evening," he says. "Let me take you to the guest quarters, and then we can do the tour." "Show me this so-called flagship, yes," the commander grumbles. "Though in my day, the captain himself would meet visiting dignitaries. I shouldn't be surprised that Pike..." The door slides closed, leaving Kyle and Serene looking at each other. "Aren't you having dinner with the captain tonight?" Kyle says, and then chuckles. "I'd give anything to be a fly on that wall." Serene isn't really listening, and then thankfully a page comes in over the speaker for him to return to sickbay, and with a final shared nod with Kyle, he leaves and makes his way back up to stable ground. The rest of Serene's shift goes smoothly only because of his lifelong dedication to Serac's teachings, giving him the fortitude to not give in to the emotional in public. He reviews the prescriptions of the patients under his caseload and makes some initial notes on topics to discuss during therapy with each of them, but his mind feels strained. And by the time Mbenga knocks on the door and tells him it's time for the shift change, he feels exhausted from the mental labor. "Dinner is at 8 in the captain's quarters," Mbenga says. "I am no longer able to join you, but do not be worried. Do not feel the need to dress up, no matter what anyone says. Dress uniform is not required. Just wear something Vulcan, and no one will be able to tell the difference." He slaps the door and leaves, and Serene shuts down his terminal and goes to prepare. He almost wishes that Mbenga had instructed him to dress up. Without the need to do his makeup, he has very little to do in the time between the end of the shift and the time the computer says he needs to travel to the captain's quarters. He also doesn't want to log into the comnet after everything that happened earlier, to see the garden and then to meet the elder Commander Kirk. Both events feel like something he needs to process before he relays the information to the rest of the Spock Watchers. He decides to meditate on it instead. An hour's meditation, and he still does not feel ready to discuss it, and so he decides to put on his makeup anyway. It is logical to remain busy when the mind is in turmoil, after all, but by the time he is done, he evaluates himself in the mirror and determines that he has not been so made up since the day of his betrothal. Before he has the chance to wipe it off, the computer beeps that it is time to leave, and so he takes himself up 10 decks to the captain's quarters, hoping no one on the crew knows the significance of the colors delicately painted upon his brow bone. Christopher Pike is famous for many things. He's on all the recruiting posters, for one, embodying the three most important things for attracting young people to service: heroic, handsome, and human. Serene has yet to meet the man, but none of this is up for debate. Among Spock watchers, though, there is a subset who believe that he is one of them, someone who is doing what he can to bring Spock and JTK together, and that he made the garden on the Enterprise to facilitate this after a vision he had on a Klingon moon. These people are ridiculed, of course. Serene is sympathetic. He has read the slide deck and the evidence posts, and they are compelling. Nevertheless, Serac teaches that the simplest reason is most likely to be true, and Pike's reputation as a gourmand also explains his dedication to fresh produce. Serene arrives on time to the captain's quarters and immediately feels like he has made a mistake. The captain is in casual civilian human clothes, as is the woman who is present. He is wearing far more makeup than any of them. When Pike answers the door, he immediately laughs. "Don't tell me. Was it Erica who told you it was formal dress tonight? A rite of passage, that woman, I swear. Come in. You must be Soren?" "Serene," Serene corrects, and the captain holds up a ta'al with the wrong hand, but the technique is good and the intent is appreciated. Serene is a tall man who has worked hard for his physique, and even though he is larger than the captain in almost every metric, something about him makes him feel small. "Well then, Dr. Serene, it is wonderful to finally meet you in person," Pike says cordially. "Please let me introduce my executive officer, Commander Una Chin Riley, my deputy science officer, Lieutenant Sam Kirk, and his father, who is visiting us, Commander George Kirk of Veterans Affairs." "It is an honor to meet you," Serene says politely. Commander Chin Riley hands him a glass of an effervescent golden drink and gestures for him to touch his glass to hers. "To your health," she says in Vulcan, and then takes a drink. Serene sniffs the drink and raises an eyebrow. Humans tend to wish each other good health before imbibing poison.
"Did this Vulcan just fall off the Plomeek truck?"
the elder Kirk says in what he must assume is a quiet voice to his son.
"Dad!"
Sam Kirk hisses. "Plomeek roots have not been transported by trucks for several hundred years," Serene says, "for which we are grateful, as it has ensured rhizomic quality has improved exponentially. I will assume you're implying that I am elderly, and hence ignorant of modern developments, and not that it is a faux pas that proves you are also unfamiliar with cultures other than your own." Next to him, Commander Chin Riley makes an odd snorting noise that Serene has learned is a proxy for laughter in some species. He takes a drink of the golden drink and finds it pleasantly light and sour. "This is a superlative drink, Captain Pike," Serene says. "I would be interested in learning how it is made."
"I'd be happy to tell you everything about it, Dr. Serene," Pike says.
He places a plate of small, intriguing green vegetal spears with a grainy and fragrant dip on the tall table nearby. "First, let us have a drink and some canapes and get to know each other." Serene takes one of the canapes and eats it carefully while the conversation moves on to Commander Kirk's discomfort traveling on one of the new shuttles. Serene observes the elder Kirk's face and thinks about how neither of his sons seem to have that unattractive hard edge to them. It is probably to their societal benefit to take after their mother in this way. Perhaps it is typical of humans to blend their parents' features in such a way. It would be an interesting research topic. A delicate chime sounds, and Pike claps his hands together. "That indicates it is time for the first course, if you could follow me." And he leads them to the table. A yeoman is standing nearby with five plates neatly balanced on her four arms, and another has a bottle of something dark and intriguing in a tall blue bottle. They take their seats and are served. And after they take their first bites and the humans make polite noises about how delicious the food is, the captain looks around the table and smiles. "So, any questions about the ship, Mr. Serene?"
"I have one," Commander Kirk says immediately, pointing with his utensils.
"Tell me, Chris, are you running a ship of complete degeneracy on purpose, or is it through mere incompetence?"
"I'm sorry," Pike says, as Commander Chin Riley whips her head around and looks murderous.
Commander Kirk smiles a nasty smile, evidently pleased to have all the attention focused on him. "First Junior tells me he's resigning his commission to go be a settler on a moon somewhere." And Serene watches as Sam seems to sink into his chair, taking a deep drink of the dark wine. And then I hear on the wires that Jim is shacked up with some Vulcan floozy, who I assume is this painted-up degenerate. He waves his fork at Serene and is in danger of losing what I've worked very hard to achieve.
You mean what Jim has worked hard to achieve, Pike says with a raised eyebrow. One would not want to assume that direct nepotism was at play in their careers.
Commander Kirk sputters, "Of course, my boys are important, Captain Pike, more important than you know."
"All my crew are important, Commander," the captain says, and Serene feels like the temperature in the room has dropped. "I hold both your sons in great esteem. Now, I agree that it is unfortunate to be losing Sam. Starfleet is in need of good officers, and Sam is among our best, but he has served Starfleet for long enough to retire out with honors and a full pension."
10 years is not, Commander Kirk starts, but is interrupted by the captain again. "With a deep space multiplier and war credit, 10 good years is 20, and we would be a healthier service if we all did our 20 equivalent and got out. The service is full of depleted officers who should have retired decades ago, but insist on lingering where they are no longer effective."
Pike picks up his glass and takes a drink, and Serene is fascinated by how hard his face looks, how much humans can supplement their words with emotion, with the precision of the finest poets.
"As for your second son, first off, you should apologize to Dr. Serene, who is a guest, and I also think looks very well. Then you should wish that you kept your mouth shut, as the Vulcan floozy you refer to is my chief science officer, the fourth in command of the Federation flagship, not to mention the son of Sarek, the Vulcan ambassador. Most parents in the galaxy would be thanking their chosen deities for their child to be lucky enough to make such a match. Last I heard, things weren't going so well, unfortunately. I try not to gossip, but a captain hears things, as you well know. Why, I have many friends at Veterans Affairs. Understandable with my being such an old-timer, and whoo, the things I have heard there. The good doctor can attest that my recent physical showed that my hearing is as acute as a triskelion bat."
Serene does not reply, correctly recognizing that Pike is in the middle of some high-level hijinks. Commander Kirk glares, "I will not be spoken to this way." The smile that Pike flashes is another masterclass in surgical emotional manipulation. "Unfortunately, Mr. Kirk, this is my ship. I would be within my rights to throw you in the brig, but to spare your son's blushes..."
"Oh, I'm fine with you throwing him in the brig," Sam interrupts, "especially if you let me film it to send to Mom and Jimmy."
Pike glares at him but continues, "Nevertheless, I will let you return to your quarters. And tomorrow at 0600, you will take the leftmost shuttle in Shuttle Bay 3 and get off my ship. It is one of the older models, so you will at least be comfortable. Thank you."
Pike stands up, placing his napkin on the table. "I am sorry, Mr. Serene, for cutting this short. I promise I will prepare dinner for you again before you leave the Enterprise. You're dismissed. Una, please stay."
Serene, Sam, and Commander Kirk all stand up in a clatter of chairs and silently file out of the room. The door closes and Sam grabs Serene's arm and pulls him down the hall.
"Come, Mr. Serene, I think we should get some dinner. I'm hungry. Don't know about you."
Serene stumbles and in doing so looks back and catches Commander Kirk's face. But it is not for many years that he understands enough about humans to decode the complexity of emotions that he sees as his son turns his back on him. He turns away hastily and lets Sam Kirk drag him off to his next adventure.
Chapter 3. "You weren't recording that, were you?" Sam Kirk asks, and he and Serene step into the turbolift and take the handles firmly. "Port Galley," he addresses the computer, and then picks up the conversation. "I saw you had your communicator out. I assumed to use the translator."
Serene pulls out the communicator and looks at it and hands it over.
"I am unsure. You are welcome to check."
"Hold on to it," Sam says. "I want an engineer to look at it. I know Mom would give her right arm for a copy of Dad getting dressed down by Pike, not to mention what Jim would do."
They arrive at the port galley and Sam strides right to the bar.
"What time are you doing sickbay tomorrow?" he asks Serene as they join the small queue. Serene pauses. What day is it tomorrow?
Friday?
Which day of the week is that? Serene asks.
Sam thinks.
Depends how you count it, fifth or sixth.
I do not think I am not on duty tomorrow, Serene says.
And Sam grins.
Then we are getting chocolate martinis and I will hear no complaint.
I have none, Serene says.
Friday, Sam says.
5 minutes later, each holding a chocolate martini in each hand. The queues get brutal later. It's more efficient this way. And with a flashing device that apparently contains the details of their food order, Serene and Sam pick their way through the crowds looking for a table.
Hey, Sam!
Someone calls out, and Sam makes a tight 270-degree turn without spilling a drop of his drink and heads towards the voice. They arrive at a small table with three women clustered around it. Sam puts his glasses down and then embraces the nearest woman, a small dark-skinned woman.
Neota, it's been too long.
She laughs and hugs him back hard. He turns, still embracing her, picks up his glass and gestures to Serene.
Ladies, this is Serene.
Serene, this is Ensign Uhura, Lieutenant Ortegas, and Lieutenant Noonien Singh.
A.K.A. Neota, Erica, and La'an, Ensign Uhura says, waving.
Sam, we're off duty. Don't stand on ceremony.
Hey, Serene, is that chocolate thing with Vulcans true?
Erica asks, gesturing to the glasses he has gripped in his hands.
Are you getting wasted tonight with us?
Serene inspects the glass.
We shall find out.
It is my first time imbibing drinks of this nature. This also has ethanol in it, so it is not a perfect test. But as a medic, I must assume clinical equipoise when undertaking even imperfect experiments.
Science, Sam hoots, and clicks their glasses together.
Sam regales their table mates with a slightly embellished story of his father trying to intimidate Pike and getting completely bodied, like, you have no idea, I thought he would explode, to a great explosion of laughter from the rest of the table. The story is interrupted by the arrival of their meal.
Is there any nutritional value to any of these items?
Serene asks, picking up a stiff parabola of some type of starch. He could not find a utensil, so he has delicately picked it up with two fingers and feels very uncomfortable about it.
I fucking hope not, Sam says,
cramming a fistful of floppy long cuboids into his mouth. His hand glistens with oil, and Serene can make out the crystals of salt that have transferred onto his skin. Serene mimics him, for a given value of mimic, in that he eats the delicacy and furrows his brow as the crisp, salty, warm umami flavor bursts across his tongue.
I enjoy these. Thank you for ordering them.
They're good dipped in the frosty version of this drink, Sam says, his eyes alight with glee.
We should get those next.
I agree, Serene says.
We need more Vulcans on board, Erica laughs. I think all nights out should have to include a Vulcan by law.
But in general, you get the questions, but God, they are game for anything. She clinks her glass with Serene.
We've been without our Vulcan for a while.
Do you know, Spock? The stories Neota must have from her placement with Amanda Grayson, but she won't breathe a word of it.
Every Vulcan is aware of Spock, Serene replies.
Spock is a princess of the Vulcan people.
Erica bursts into laughter as Uhura shakes her head.
They don't have gendered nouns in Vulcan, Uhura corrects, dropping into flawless Vulcan to explain Serene's faux pas to him.
My apologies, Serene says, switching back to standard.
Spock is a male princess. His grandmother, T'Pau, is our religious and cultural touchstone. The closest thing to her position that I know the standard word for is that she is a queen.
So could Spock become king or a male queen? La'an asks.
She's been quiet so far, drinking a clear, effervescent drink and watching him very closely.
Serene shakes his head.
It will pass to another clan when she dies to avoid a return to the clan wars of Vulcan's history.
I didn't think Federation members were allowed to have monarchies, Uhura says. But I went to a society wedding when I was there, and yeah, wow, we don't have anything like that on Earth anymore. It's different for the Vulcans, Erica says with a shrug. T'Pau does not have absolute power, Serene explains. She is on our High Council, but she does not sit in the Federation Parliament.
Right, Erica interrupts, nodding in that human way he is still learning to endure.
Spock's father is our representative in Parliament, Serene finishes.
Damn, Sam says. And here I thought he was just terrifying because he was my boss.
It explains a lot, though. You remember when T'Pring was here? Ortega says, not to mention Spock's mother when she was on board. Did you think all Vulcans dressed like that?
T'Pring is part of a family with aspirations to the upper echelons of Vulcan society. She is a member of the clan that is to succeed T'Pau, but from a low-ranking family, but one that is known for the beauty of its women and success in commercial matters. She wants to sit on the council, and her family made a fortuitous match with the Sichin T'Gai family.
Gesundheit, Erica says. Is that Spock's clan name? I just heard you say it, and I don't think I could mimic it for love nor money.
Uhura raises her eyebrows. I think I can get it one time in three, but only because I challenged myself. There's a reason he goes by Spock. Humans just can't get it right. Apart from Amanda, of course.
Erica turns back to Serene. So T'Pring is dressing for the job she wants? She doesn't have much of a name, but she has ambition and beauty and comes from ambition and beauty.
Affirmative.
Serene takes a drink to give himself time to decide what to say next. My sister, T'Unak, attended the same educational establishment as T'Pring's cousin, T'Miru, Serene says. She has always been impressive.
Well, there's really nothing like Vulcan gossip, La'an says. I need another drink.
Sam and La'an are volunteered to go to the bar at that point with the promise to get frozen chocolate margaritas and fries for everyone.
I still can't get over the news that Sam's dad sassed the captain, Uhura says, like he's Captain Pike, the Captain Pike, and on his ship at his dinner table. It makes no sense.
Oh, I don't know, Erica says. It makes sense. Insane sense, but you got to remember that the Kirk brothers are like fifth generation Starfleet. Their ancestors were in Starfleet before it was Starfleet, when it was still the Earth Space Force. I think one of them was involved with the Phoenix. The history of humans in space is just Kirk's all the way down, and their dad is extremely proud of that. Sam told me once that he and Jim were raised to believe that this, she gestures at the beautiful shiny flagship, was their destiny.
She ducks her head and drops the volume of her voice down, and the rest of the table lean in similarly.
I mean, Sam is considered the black sheep of the family, and he is a married father of two working as a head of department on the flagship of the Federation at 30. Kirks are supposed to be captains, commodores, admirals. They're supposed to die in battle and have starships named after them. They're not supposed to be scientists. And they're certainly not supposed to be trophy husbands, no matter how sparkling and mutual the trophying is.
Which ship did their father command? Uhura asks.
Erica shakes her head. That's the thing, isn't it?
He never rose above XO.
Youngest XO in the fleet, but topped out there. And the story is a long one. But he's basically got no shoulders left for all the chips in them. It's part of what makes him such a ferocious advocate for the veterans. Don't get me wrong. He did amazing things while in active service. Plus, he taught at the academy for years, made first contact with a dozen species. But never getting that final nod. That's why he's so obsessed with his son's careers. He wants Sam and Jim to make up for what he thinks is his failure.
That's the point when Sam and La'an come back, laden with trays of frosty, beautiful goodness.
Serene, give Uhura and La'an your communicator, Sam says after he takes his seat. I need to see if there's a recording of my dad getting owned.
Serene hands it over and Uhura and La'an spread a napkin across the table and begin to take it apart.
What were you guys talking about while I was away? Sam asks.
An awkward silence, but Serene sees this as his opportunity.
We were discussing your brother and Spock, Serene says.
Oh, you know about that? Sam says, taking another big sip of his drink. Jimmy isn't answering my messages at the moment. Isn't he in the BQ? Erica asks. Like the deepest, beta-ist Q? Sam shrugs. I guess he is on the other side of the galaxy, he concedes. But I think he saw the headlines about Spock getting married and saw his pasty ass pasted across the tabloids and turned his communicator off for good. Spock has not gotten married, Serene says without thinking, though there are rumors about his whereabouts. He panics. I have heard this. I do not know more. Everyone looks at each other, and then Erica sighs and hands her credit chip to La'an with a mock bow. La'an looks smug and wordlessly gets up to go to the bar again with it. Well, he's not gone to the Farragut on his knees begging for Jim's skinny ass to take him back, so probably works out to the same thing, Sam continues. God, I am glad I'm leaving in 3 months. Being stuck between my boss and my brother's epic love affair has been second only to the war as the most unpleasant part of my career in Starfleet. And let me tell you, I would rather take another battle than to spend any more time with them making star-crossed eyes at each other during meetings. You really have suffered, Erica sighs sarcastically. You should tell someone. They might give you another medal. At least this time it'd be for something other than sitting on your ass in a cell while La'an does all the hard work. You're one to talk, Sam laughs. You were sitting right there next to me. They clink their now empty glasses, and La'an comes back with a bottle of celebratory champagne, and the conversation moves on into the night. Serene returns to his quarters 3 hours later and immediately pulls out his tricorder and takes a set of readings. His cardiovascular system is working with intolerable limits, but as the Vulcan body is known for its high tolerances, it is not really explanatory of why he feels so strange. He pulls out his meditation mat and sits down, but the ship suddenly begins to twist on its axis. Opening his eyes, the room is still. He lies down and the ship begins its twisting again. Strange. I think I am drunk, he announces to nobody, and in the time-honored tradition of drunks everywhere, he pulls out his pad and starts typing. AQ, Spock watching, thread, an update on my Enterprise experience. User, Serac of Vulcan. Today, I went to the garden. It is magnificent, as we had thought. A true feat of engineering. I felt the universe move when I was within it. Did you know it is illegal to steal apples? I did not. I dined tonight with Captain Pike and his guests. He is as good a cook as his reputation precedes him. There is more, but I cannot say right now. I then proceeded to the port galley with colleagues. I have consumed alcohol and chocolate for the first time. The experience has been illuminating. I also ate a foodstuff called French fries. They are also very pleasant. If you have not tried them, I recommend them as a good entry to human food. Thank you, computer, for all your help. You are a good computer. I hope you are given rewards for your labors. User Soraka Vulcan has joined the chat. User Kabanana Toady. Serene, what is happening? Have you had any gossip? User Soraka Vulcan. I have had several gossip. The people of the Enterprise believe that Spock has got married. They had placed monetary bets on it. User replace fragments. Do none of them ever read the gossip sites? User Soraka Vulcan. I do not believe they do. They are very busy. They mostly consume poisonous beverages on their downtime. To blend in, I have partaken. User replace fragments. Lol, Serene is drunk. Good for you, buddy. User JTK is gay 69. Are you ready for the next phase, Serene? You have been there for nearly a week now. LMK when you are in place, and I'll send you the update file. User Soraka Vulcan. I do not think it is right for me to go to the next phase yet. Please give me more time. I will apprise you when I am ready. User JTK is gay 69. Sure thing. User Soraka Vulcan. It is good to speak to you all. I must now go. The ship appears to be spinning at an alarming rate again. User Soraka Vulcan. Strange. The computer indicates that inertial dampeners are functioning correctly. User Cabanana Toady. It's the booze, baby. User Soraka Vulcan. Ah, in which case I shall sign off. LLAP. To all emoji. The computer wakes him with its infernal blaring for the fourth day running and tells him that it is Friday, named for the ancient earth goddess Frigg, associated with marriage, prophecy, clairvoyance, and motherhood, and that his shift starts in 1 hour. Serene makes a note of this, though the computer assures him that none of this is compulsory, and then goes to the bathroom to vomit. He arrives in sickbay to find a long, pale woman with pale hair and bright blue eyes sitting with her legs up on the nurse's station. She jumps to her feet when he comes in and stalks over to him. Hi, I'm Chief Nurse Christine Chapel. I've been off on an archaeological medicine placement for the last few months. I've just come back this morning, transferred from the USS Kismet. You must be Serene?
That is correct, Serene says. The pounding of his head, mostly ignorable, though her enthusiasm makes it easy to go through the motions of human interaction. It is nice to meet you, Nurse Chapel.
Chapel beams at him in that maniacal human way he is starting to not find so terrifying and rocks on her heels. I can't believe I missed Jelly's pregnancy. How are you finding life here on the Enterprise?
There is a lot of it, Serene says after careful consideration. I begin to see patients today. I have a busy morning, but Counselor Jelita's notes are extremely detailed. I believe I will be able to pick up where she has left off.
Cool. Okay, but do you want to see the kittens? Christine asks, pulling out her communicator. For a fleeting moment in the messages screen, he sees that she has been communicating with a woman called T'Pring, but he only manages to see a tiny glimpse of a preview. But out of context, the reference to hunks of prime steak makes little sense. The kittens are extremely pleasing, and Counselor Jelly seems a very attentive mother. Her thick black fur and white patches are reflected in several of her progeny. The others are a rich sunset orange, striped like ripples on the water. He has not seen infantcations before. And Christine shows him various other feline species and talks about convergent evolution and the genetics of coat coloration, in between making strange noises that she explains are because they're so cute. He has to break away from Christine's seemingly endless pictures of kittens to attend to his 6:10 appointment. The counseling room is cool and comfortable, and his patient is doing well enough that they mostly discuss some of her work problems. It is much easier work than he is used to at the hospital, and when he resurfaces for a 7:30 appointment, Christine waves at him, and he waves back without a second thought. He continues through the morning, through personal problems, professional setbacks, and crises of confidence, before finally resurfacing at 12 o'clock. Another doctor has booked the counseling room for the next hour, so he returns to the nurse's station to finish his notes. Nurse Chapel is still there, twirling a pen across her knuckles as she reads on a pad, her feet once again propped up on the station. I've heard a lot about you, Serene, she says as he types his notes carefully, using the unfamiliar Fed standard keyboard layout. The crew can't stop raving about you.
They have known me for only five Earth days, he says, however many days it has been, it is not enough time to form an opinion of someone.
I don't know, Christine says. I've only known you for 3 to 5 minutes, and I know I want to know more. Fancy getting some lunch?
We are working in the same department and on the same shift, therefore it is logical that we dine together, Serene agrees.
They go to the mess, and Serene chooses a soup that smells extremely good. So I hear you applied for this job because of the neuro rehab paper, Christine says as she munches on her meal of various fried fish and starches, enrobed in further fried starches. She had explained that it is traditional to her ancestral area, which he finds fascinating. You were one of the authors,
You were there that night, Serene states. Christine hums in agreement around a mouthful of fried food. It helped me get on to my PhD, that and the fellowship. I'm thinking about researching intraspecies neuroplasticity with an emphasis on the early historical pairings, specifically those before first contact. That is interesting, Serene says. I thought that the rumors of human-alien breeding pre-first contact were a myth.
That has been the line for a long time, Christine says, but archaeological genetic studies have shown that there are definitely some populations who inherited some alien funkiness.
Fascinating, Serene says. Do you think that was something that affected patient X in your paper?
Christine nods. Potentially. The patient was officially Psi null, but everything we know about him says that he should not have been able to bond spontaneously, let alone have such a reaction to the breaking. But Jim's a strange one medically in general.
Her eyes bug wide and she grimaces. I mean, the patient, patient X, shit.
Leonard told me he told me to be more careful. Fuck.
Serene takes a spoonful of his soup. My apologies, Nurse Chapel. I was distracted for a moment by someone on the other side of the room. Can you repeat yourself?
Chapel stares at him. Seriously, you weren't listening? Or are you just sparing my feelings?
Vulcans do not lie, Christine.
Serene lies, and Christine laughs. Oh, Spock would like you, Mr. Serene, she says.
Really? He asks, and his voice sounds hopeful to himself.
Absolutely.
She takes a big bite of her sandwich and her smile bulges, and it is not unattractive.
Twin bullshit merchants, the both of you.
Serene considers this. I do not think that either of us have the qualifications for a career selling manure, but I appreciate the intention behind the phrase nonetheless.
She laughs, and when Sam arrives and asks to join them, they bring him in.
How's the hangover? Sam asks.
Serac teaches that emotional indulgence is acceptable on occasion, but to anticipate that there will be consequences. I assume that this is what he was referring to.
Both Sam and Christine laugh at that.
If you want something to help you with that, let me know, Christine offers. Friends have to look out for each other.
Serene raises an eyebrow and takes another spoon of his soup. That would be appreciated. Thank you.
Private message from user Dr. Claxton and user JTK is gay 69 to user Siraka Vulcan.
User Dr. Claxton. Serene, can you give us the time frame for you to plant the seed?
User Dr. Claxton. JTK says that there's a big security update coming soon that might make our plan no longer work.
User JTK is gay 69.
Yeah, we're up against the clock a bit. It's already rolled out in the BQ networks. The AQ is coming in the next week. I'll need to repatch your pad if you're still planning on giving us garden access.
User Siraka Vulcan is away.
User Dr. Claxton, is he ignoring us?
User JTK is gay 69. I can ping him on the fleet network. Hang on.
User JTK is gay 69. His communicator is on and active. I've sent a message to his internal account.
User JTK is gay 69.
He's got an autoresponder on there as well.
Huh.
User Dr. Claxton. I've got a bad feeling about this.
With the arrival of Christine and Serene's patient workload finally ramping up, the next week goes by so fast that Serene had to check with the computer whether traveling at warp would affect his perception of time. He had heard of relativity, but after the computer explained the Heisenberg compensator's functionality to him, it all seemed clear, or as clear as it was ever going to be without advanced study. Normally, he would have begun said study, but the most plausible explanation for the speeding up of time is that life on the Enterprise is addictive, in the way arguing on the ComNet had felt in the depths of his addiction. There was something different to this mixed crew, this personification of the great Federation experiment that he had always admired from afar. To be in the thick of it with humans, Andorians, Tellarites, Deltans, Illyrians, Cations. It was a testament to Serac's greatest edict, a glimpse at the infinite diversity of the cosmos.
The only problem was the issue of his deception. The group chat messages began to sit unread in his inbox for longer and longer periods. Instead of progressing to the next stage of the plan, Serene attended movie night and ate something called popcorn. Rather than employ the decryption key, he joined Ortegas and Mitchell's Parisi Squares team as what they called a ringer and helped win a crucial match. He continues writing a weekly summary of his time on the Enterprise, but the longer he stays, the less he wants to share his findings with people. Spock is everywhere, in every anecdote and story, and JTK is equally present in the narrative. Their relationship was known and celebrated, and their breakup had been a significant event on the ship. The rumors that the reorganization of the fleet to spare Spock and JTK having to work together, while unfounded, were widely believed by portions of the crew. Serene considers writing that anecdote up as a post. It would not be betraying confidence. He starts it but abandons it after 10 minutes and instead decides to go for a walk. Now he has settled into the routine of the ship. He has enjoyed exploring in the middle of gamma shift as a prelude to sleep or meditation. Tonight, he ventures into the lower decks, and though he never found the additional green spaces, there was something wonderful about going to the ship's garden and just listening to the sounds of the artificial breeze in the very real leaves here, traveling at 3 times the speed of light, flourishing where no trees ever had. Whatever secrets the trees held about Spock and Kirk, he was increasingly content to let them keep them and enjoy them for their more obvious pleasures. It is wandering the halls during gamma shift that night that he hears something on the edge of his hearing. It sounds like someone in pain, a low moan and a grunt. Then a woman's voice calls out clear as day, "Chris! Oh, Chris!" Serene bursts into a sprint. Christine should be asleep. She had complained about switching from Earth's schedule to that of the Enterprise, and Mbenga had written her a prescription for a sleep aid. She is also far from her quarters or any of her usual hangouts. Whatever is happening, he needs to attend to it. He follows the sounds as they get more and more intense. The voice pleading with Christine sounds like it is in agony. He eventually finds the source of the noise, an otherwise nondescript access door with a note on the status hatch that it is out of service, and punches in his medical override, brandishing a nearby fire extinguisher as a weapon. At first, he cannot parse what he is seeing, because his brain is expecting Christine, her long pale limbs and distinctive hair. But the eyes that catch his first are as blue as hers, and he quickly places them as ones belonging to Commander Chin Riley. And after some muffled grumbling, they are joined by the equally piercing pair owned by Captain Pike. It takes Serene a moment to mentally detangle their limbs, process their rumpled uniforms, and finally match their shocked expressions before he fully realizes what he is witnessing. "Excuse me," Serene says, and closes the door, re-engages the lock, and flees. Chapter 4. The next morning, Serene is once again in back-to-back sessions, though this is by hasty design for requesting, borrowing, and finally stealing patients from his colleagues. He doesn't do any of his patient notes at the nurse's station and asks a yeoman to bring him lunch, choosing instead to hide in the corner office for the whole day. It gives the best view across sickbay and allows him to note with dread that Commander Chin Riley visits sickbay 4 times and leaves when she is told that he is still in with patients. He usually finishes with patients at 16:40, giving adequate time to collate his final notes and perform his the-end-of-the-day administrative tasks. But when he goes to end his availability, the computer chimes that he has another session booked. The door slides open at that point, and Commander Chin Riley is there, staring at him defiantly. Serene realizes that the human tendency towards small talk has a function, to avoid conversations you do not want to have. He still cannot manage to produce anything suitable, and so he hides in truth, as Serac teaches. "My apologies, Commander. I am about to see a patient. If you ask the computer, we can arrange a meeting for another time.
The commander does not take a hint and instead steps into the room. Serene steps to the side while she takes the patient seat opposite his desk and smiles in a way that does not meet her eyes.
There is no need for that. I am your final patient, Mr. Serene, she says sweetly. I'm here to talk.
Commander Chin Riley, he says hastily, if this is about last night, I did not see anything.
Yes, you did, she says, and sits back in the armchair. You saw the captain and I having sex in a public space. I wish to talk about it. I need to know you will not mention it to anyone.
I will not, he says.
And yet I do not believe you, she says.
I do not know how to convince you, Serene says, taken aback by her abrupt disbelief.
However, there is one way to ensure that I cannot discuss it.
Go ahead, she says, and even though her hands are empty, he feels like she's pointing a phaser at him.
I am. I cannot violate the doctor-patient contract. If we were to have a real session, then your privacy will be legally protected. I will also not have to falsify my medical notes. I am not familiar enough with your systems to lie to the computer yet.
That sounds like a deal, Commander Chin Riley says cautiously.
Commander, you should call me Una, she says. It facilitates a more open conversation if we are not adherents to the command hierarchy.
Serene has been standing until now, and so he takes his seat, thankful for the desk between them. He has a strange, intrusive memory of a scene from the film that was shown where the protagonist hid behind an upturned desk to escape the villain's projectile weaponry. It is always an option, but therapy is about confronting fears in a safe environment. He has always held that sessions should be productive, but not easy. Today, his skills will need to be used both ways, it seems.
Una, Serene says, resting his hands on the desk gently, let me begin by telling you something of my credentials and treatment philosophy. What you say here is confidential. I am bound by the Starfleet Medical Code of Conduct as well as the norms and standards of the Vulcan Medical Ethics Board. I am a practitioner of non-interventional psychiatry, by which I mean I am not licensed to use any telepathic or mind-meld methods in my treatment of you. Additionally, I can assure you that I have a low level of telepathic ability by Vulcan standards and strong shields. Even if you touch me, I will not be able to read your mind, not without pharmacological assistance. I have not had a chance to review your record, so let me begin by sharing what I believe to be your vital statistics. You are Illyrian, but your biology is very close to human standards for your age and sex, and for most of your time in Starfleet, you have been listed as human. A subset of Illyrians practice genetic modifications for cultural reasons, and your family is one of them. I must ask at this point, are you a telepath?
No, Una says, her arms folded across her chest as she listens to him, her face still tense and her tone terse.
For my personal intrigue, I must ask, do Illyrians have the capacity to induce telepathy with their biological augmentation?
They do. My family does not, however.
Fascinating, Serene says. I would be very interested in learning more about the cultural choices behind what adaptions are made another time. How would you describe your health generally?
It is good.
Looking at the computer, Serene takes in the summary of her results.
I concur. You are in excellent physical health.
Your mental health, however, is underdocumented by the standards of this ship. In fact, Counselor Jelly's notes state that she has never managed to meet you for a general screening, let alone scheduled you for your annual 6 sessions of therapy. Have you ever received psychological treatment?
Una uncrosses her arms and then immediately crosses them again as if to hug herself.
At the start of my career, I attended the sessions, but I found the treatments useless and stressful when I had so much to hide.
That is understandable, Serene says. making a discreet note. What has brought you for treatment today?
Subterfuge, Una replies. I wished to speak with you about an event that you witnessed yesterday.
You could have ordered me to report to your office, Serene points out. I am of the rank ensign and a visitor on the ship. I was drunk last week in the port galley, which did not go unnoticed. No one would question your calling me to visit you.
Una smiles gently. I'm sorry I missed that.
Serene purses his lips. It was a novel experience. However, the aftermath was deeply unpleasant. I will be unlikely to do so again without good reason.
Do Vulcans ever do anything without good reason? She asks.
Vulcans do things for many reasons, he says, as do Illyrians and humans. Perhaps you can tell me the reason you and the captain were copulating in the access conduit last night.
Why does anyone? She shrugs.
I must confess I do not know why anyone would, which is why I asked. But following that question to its logical conclusion, there could be many reasons. Some species have an inability to control their sexual urges, for example. Others place ceremonial or ritual significance on intercourse in holy or sacred places. There are the realms of fetishes, and I have heard tell of people who undertake sexual activity to achieve secondary goals, perhaps of revealing a secret or to induce feelings in others.
Una scoffs.
Are those the only options you can think of? Either Chris and I had sex in the access corridor down in the lower decks because we have some uncontrollable sexual appetite that means we need to fuck or die, or that the Deck 18 access conduit is some holy shrine. And at this point, she makes a noise that could only generously be described as a laugh. Or we wanted to be caught. Mr. Serene, I do not wish to cast aspersions about your love life, but...
Serene recognizes a reversal when he sees it, and so does not let it affect him.
Knowing what I know about human biology, this ship, and yourselves, logically it is the latter that is the most fitting answer.
Una doesn't answer him directly, and she sounds angry to his inexperienced ear.
Do you know the number of times I've caught officers having mid-shift delights? More than I can count. I have busted people to the laundry for it, but I had never done it, not before last night.
That forces the question, what was different about last night?
Una sighs and looks at the ceiling for a long moment before finally answering. I've spent my entire career being a perfect officer.
Mr. Serene, I did a yeoman year. I don't know if that means anything to you.
I have been on this ship for nearly 3 weeks, he says with a tight voice. I am well aware of the yeoman.
She smiles. Okay, so you probably do understand. Even during that year, no one knew. I have been perfect. I've been married twice, and neither of them knew I was Illyrian. There are master spies who could not keep that level of obfuscation up.
It would indeed be a very difficult task.
Una shakes her head.
I don't know what came over me. We were on an evening walk, off duty, but only just. It was nice, and I knew the deck would be quiet. There are no crew quarters, and the laboratories are only used during alpha shifts. Chris, the captain, he isn't used to sneaking around or breaking the rules. It didn't take much convincing, but now...
She bites her lip as if trying to hold emotion in.
How does the captain feel now? Serene asks.
Una's voice wobbles as she replies.
He wants to end it. He says that this is getting out of hand. Fucking in an access corridor, anyone could have heard us. Someone did hear us.
Do you want to end it? Serene asks.
No! Una shouts. Are you kidding me? I made a decision to live a life of secrecy when I was too young to really understand what it meant. And then 25 years later, I made the decision to blow it all up, and somehow I got away with it. I got my commission back, and better yet, I got legitimacy. And then a year later, I'm back to keeping something important a secret, and I just can't. I can't do it. It's killing me.
This is what you should tell Captain Pike, Serene says. And the next week you should come back and we can continue to talk. Does that sound acceptable?
You know, I think I will, Una says.
They make an appointment on the system and both stand up.
You're an interesting one, Mr. Serene, she says.
I have heard that from many people on this ship, Serene says. I think that perhaps you like interesting people.
Una raises her eyebrows. I think you might be right.
And with a small smile, she leaves, and Serene breathes out a breath he hadn't realized he'd been holding, and sits back down to work on his notes.
AQ Spock watching.
Serac update? User Tokekla.
Hey, does anyone know what happened to Serac of Vulcan? I really liked his insights into the Enterprise. I had a look at the news and the Starfleet gossip nodes. It doesn't look like the ship has been in any firefights or anything. Anyone know? Serac, we miss you.
Comments. User Black Hole Fantasy.
They're in deep space, lol. He probably just doesn't have signal. There's a new update being rolled out next week to allow for subspace comm use, so we should hear from him soon.
User Vodka and Donuts.
What if they caught him, though?
User rah-rah-rah-rah-rah-rah-rah-rah-rah.
It is not illegal to be a member of this group. Chill out.
User Tokekla.
Isn't he a medic, though? Probably is illegal for him to tell us stuff. What if he breaks the medical laws?
User Black Hole Fantasy.
Then we'll soon hear about what happened to him. LOL.
No way, that's staying off the wires.
User Serac of Vulcan.
Thank you for your communication.
User Black Hole Fantasy is correct. The Enterprise has been out of communication range for the last few weeks, and my ability to post to the comnet has been restricted. Be assured that I, as well as the Enterprise and her crew, are well. I will post an update when solid connection is again possible. LLAP. To all emoji.
User Dr. Claxton.
Bullshit. Answer your comms, coward.
User Serac of Vulcan has joined the chat.
User Restore Fragments.
Serene, it's been ages. We thought you'd been hurt or something.
User Serac of Vulcan.
I was with patients all day.
User JTKSGay69.
Anyone we would have heard of?
User Serac of Vulcan.
I will not divulge that.
User JTKSGay69.
Come on, man. It's just us. Give us some honey.
User Serac of Vulcan.
I will not violate my oaths. This discussion is proving tiresome. And there are no bees on the Enterprise, I have checked.
User JTKSGay69.
Speaking of, have you looked at Spock's records yet?
User Dr. Claxton.
Of course he hasn't. He's just there for a jolly. He doesn't care about the mission.
User Restore Fragments.
Guys, come on, chill out.
User Dr. Claxton.
No. I put my reputation on the line for this guy, and he won't even install a little patch?
User Restore Fragments.
I thought we were just having fun. I didn't realize you guys were serious.
User Serac of Vulcan.
As I said many times in our planning of this, I will not violate my professional oaths for any reason. I will not be looking at any records that are not critical to my work. I remind you, User Dr. Claxton, putting doctor in your username is not the equivalent of 12 years of medical training.
User Serac Vulcan.
I am a medical professional. If I remember correctly, you are a dry cleaner on the third moon of Tellar.
User Serac Vulcan.
When I have a stain in my robes, I will come to you. Until then, I believe this is over.
User Serac Vulcan has left the chat.
User Restore Fragments.
Burn.
Laughing emoji.
User JTKIsGay69.
Damn, he didn't even say LLAP.
Shocked emoji.
Serene spends the next few hours furiously catching up with the rumors on AQ Spock watching with all the fervor of an addict falling off the wagon and making up for lost time. In the 2 weeks he has been ignoring it, there has been much to talk about. JTK had been seen at a Bullion cultural festival with a man the forum speculated feverishly was his new boyfriend before someone corrected them that it was just his captain with a new haircut. There were still a few people holding out belief that there was something going on there, but most had moved on to the real mystery. Where is Spock? The speculation wasn't just restricted to the Spock watchers. It seemed like the Vulcan press were all discussing not just Spock's disappearance, but the recent betrothal of T'Pring to a new man, Staan, and what this means for Spock in the long term. What the forum was talking about that the press weren't was that the Sichin Tagai clan had been heavily leveraging their lawyers in keeping speculation about Spock's future, especially around his time, to an absolute minimum. Even on the Enterprise, there were beginning to be murmurings. Spock had been gone for several weeks before Serene had arrived, and Sam Kirk had confessed to Serene over drinks. Friday night this time, Serene had learned that specific lesson, that the burden of leading the science department when he was, quote, halfway out the door, felt like it was a personal attack on him. "He never liked me," Sam lamented. "No one believes me that this is revenge on me personally. I know it." Serene doubted this, but he had his own theories. His personal favorite theories, cribbed from the weekly speculation thread, which was dwarfing the romance thread for probably the first time since JTK came onto the scene, were that he'd enrolled in doctoral studies, that he'd been declared Vitash Couture and institutionalized, or that he'd quit Starfleet and married JTK, and they were now working as pirates for the Orion syndicates. Not that any of these were likely. Serene believed that the most likely explanation was that he had had his time and was recovering in the aftermath. Those theories were just ones that he found pleasing in their audacity. The truth was likely to be much more mundane. A month into his placement, Serene is in a rare REM cycle of sleep when he is awakened by an insistent chiming on the door. It is followed by an insistent tapping and then by a pounding that finally startles him awake. He opens the door to find Captain Pike standing there. He is in his uniform, but his hair looks like it has had his hand running through it for many hours. Serene has now dined at the captain's table 2.5 times, if you include the time with Commander Kirk Sr., and he likes to believe he has a fairly solid read on the captain's psyche, helped, of course, by his weekly sessions with Commander Chin Riley, who has taken to therapy like a bird to flight. He has never seen nor heard of him looking so uncharacteristically nervous. "What can I do for you, Captain?" Serene says, pulling his robe around him. "I need to speak to you about something delicate, Mr. Serene," Pike says quietly but insistently. "May I come in?" "Of course," Serene says. The door slides closed behind the captain and they stand in the low light together. "What is the nature of the psychiatric emergency?" Serene asks. Pike wrings his hands, nervous energy crystallizing off him. "As you know, we have a Vulcan member of the crew here on the Enterprise, my head of sciences, Mr. Spock. He has been on leave for the last few weeks. However, he has now returned. I am concerned about him. He does not seem himself. He asked for an urgent extraction from a Vulcan situation, which I was happy to assist in, and we were able to do it with little fanfare. It is likely no one on Vulcan knows he is here. It is in his best interest that it stays that way, but nevertheless, I believe it would be beneficial if he could speak to someone who understands what is going on with some cultural delicacy." "Of course, Captain," Serene says. "When would you like this to take place?" "Now," the captain replies. Serene pauses. "Now?" The captain smiles apologetically. "If you could." "I shall get dressed," Serene says, gesturing for the captain to leave. "What you're wearing is fine," Pike says hastily. "If you could come..." Serene looks down at his worn black robes with the frayed hems and oil stains and feels dangerously close to a xenophobic thought. Sir, I understand it may not appear as such, but these are my sleeping clothes, and I am uncomfortable appearing in front of a patient, especially a Vulcan, in such a state of dishabille. I can dress in Vulcan informal clothing if you believe it would be better, but it will take but 1 minute for me to become presentable. Of course, Pike says apologetically. I'll wait outside. Serene only has a moment, and so he spends it as productively as he can. By panicking in a very un-Vulcan manner for a full 20 seconds before invoking Serac, the ancient gods of Vulcan, and any and all deities he's ever heard of for another 10, before dressing in his casual robes, opening the door and following the captain off to something he had never in his most fevered dreams thought would happen. He is brought to a set of rooms on deck 6 where most of the command crew are quartered. The captain inputs what Serene assumes is his override and then nods for Serene to enter. He is expecting you, he says. The room is dark, save for 3 meditation candles burning in formation. Sitting in the first meditation position is Spock, the infamous son of Sarek himself. He is wearing a set of meditation robes, loosely pulled around himself, but he is obviously naked beneath them. His hair is short and untidy, and his beard has begun to grow in. Serene approaches slowly, his heart in his mouth. Spock, son of Sarek and Amanda Grayson, Serene says in High Golic, I am your faithful servant, Serene, son of Sonak and Tavin. He drops into a deep bow. He greets me correctly, Spock murmurs in a language that Serene has come to recognize as vernacular Earth English. Attend, Serene, Spock replies in Golic. His voice sounds worn and exhausted, like he had been shouting for hours. Serene steps into the meditation sphere and drops gracefully to his knees. Up close, he is struck by how three-dimensional Spock is in person, how prominent his cheekbones are, how human-textured his hair is, and inevitably how beautiful he is by candlelight, despite his obvious distress. Captain Pike asked me to attend to thee. I am a Vulcan healer, seconded to the fleet of the stars, but verily, I am also a counselor of the school of Serac. He indicated that thou art in psychic distress. My lord, please accept my offer of assistance. You know me, Spock says. You know what I am. He drops out of High Golic into standard Vulcanese with a sneer. This is pathetic. Do not waste my time. I do know you, Serene interrupts, switching to match him. I know who you are. I know probably more than I should, but I am bound by my professional vows, and you and I both know that Vulcans take our vows extremely seriously. Nothing you tell me will ever go beyond the constraints of the session, not unless I believe you are going to hurt yourself or others. Spock pulls his knees to himself and rests his chin on the ledge it creates and says nothing. Spock, Serene says, I do not know all the details. But from what I do know, you have endured much. You have gone through enough mental strife for a lifetime, and has not even been a year, he says. Logically, it is entirely appropriate for you to be having difficulties. Because of my human side, Spock says, but Serene shakes his head. No, because what you have been through is difficult. Spock just looks at him, eyes huge and near black in the low light. Spock, Serene says gently, logic teaches us much, but Serac teaches us that logic is not the end. It is the conduit through which we find that by which we are made complete. He looks down at his hands and takes a moment before continuing. Are you familiar with Serac's Kadits? I have not read them since school, Spock admits, and they were never my preferred topic. Too many lessons where the supposedly logical conclusion was that I was in the wrong. Serene gets up and walks over to Spock's bookshelf. Sure enough, he quickly finds a finely bound edition of Sirach's teachings and comes back to sitting. He opens the book to a specific page and holds it out to Spock. Read this. I do not wish for another lesson in scripture. Spock spits. The final word is in English, and while Serene does not know it, he recognizes the feeling behind it, and a final piece of the puzzle slides into place. He takes in the look of him, the way there is dust caught under his fingernails, the way his hair curls in an un-Vulcan way, the rumors on the comnet, and the way the captain described his escape. And as his eyes adjust to the darkness, he sees the telltale marks on his skin, the distinctive green bruising used by a specific set of monks on their most hopeless of cases. You were at Tokmar. You attempted Kolinar, he states. And it is ironic that he cannot keep the shock out of his voice. Spock does not reply, but he inclines his head slightly, which Serene takes as confirmation. Serene is tired, he is out of his depth, but maybe despite all he has been taught in this life, there is an invisible hand that controls the fates. Because of all the mental health practitioners in the galaxy, it was he who is in place to give to Spock the thing that Serene wishes had been done for him when he was young and feeling unsure about his bonding, about his time, about the whole universe and the expectations of him that he felt powerless to ever achieve. Sirach was a man, Serene says carefully. He lived at a time where our world was torn apart by selfishness and greed and anger and hate. But he wasn't a perfect avatar of logic. He never achieved Kolinar. In fact, you can search this book cover to cover and will not find mention of that word or anything that we currently practice as Kolinar. Kolinar is an aspiration to perfection, a goal that is not supposed to be real. We are not supposed to be emotionless automaton, Spock. We rise above the violence and the destruction, but we do this by using our emotional control, our clear eyes, and our scientific brains to build a better world. Spock frowns gently. You are Sirach's kin, Serene says, as I am sure has been drilled into you for your entire life. But by inconvenient statistics of demography, at this point, half a Vulcan can make that claim. Nevertheless, your family have always been the true believers, the fundamentalists of our kind. Your father, and I say this honestly, is not a logical man. This is well known by most of the Vulcan populace. He quoted the story of the Selot at you, I expect. We had a pet Selot, Spock says, and Serene smiles gently at that. Of course you did. The story of the Selot is the simplest of Sirach's kadits, but the hardest to process for men like your father. The context is lost with the passage of time, but the story, I think, is fitting for us today. Tell it to me, Spock says. He is still strung tight as a lyre. But Serene can sense a curiosity building within him, even if for him to actually be sensing so would be illogical, considering how weak his senses are. Serene inclines his head. Of course. Sirach tells a story of his kin who loses his animals to a Selot. The beast had been driven up the mountain from her usual hunting grounds on the plains by a flood, and the people of the mountain tried to protect their animals to no avail. You know more than I how the Selot is an apex predator and intelligent hunter, Soon enough, what started as a simple annoyance over time became a crisis. The Selah did not return to her home after the flood subsided. In fact, she built a new den, and the people of the mountain continued to suffer. Serac attends a wedding and is surprised to be served no meat at the feast, and this is explained to him that it is because the Selah ate the livestock. To everyone's surprise, Serac declares that the Selah protections that riddle the land should be dismantled, and the Selah should be invited into the garden, and that grain and water be left for her, and a soft, protected place to sleep. Soon enough, the Selah comes into the garden through the open door, and she eats her fill and leaves. Serac watches from the window and does not give an answer when interrogated by his kin as to his plan. The Selah comes the next day again, and it is the same, although this time Serac watches from the veranda. The family stay inside the house and proclaim him to be suffering from a sickness. When the Selah comes the next day, she finds Serac meditating in the garden. When he wakes, the Selah is eating next to him, and to the surprise of his kin, Serac and the Selah lie together in the sun until it begins to set, and she once again leaves. The next day, the Selah brings him her cubs, and they all eat together. And the day after, the Selah returns to her hunting ground, and the people of the mountain ask Serac for an explanation. And rather than doing so, he teaches them the first 13 precepts of meditation and logic. Spock smiles in recognition. I enjoyed this story as a child. You tell it well. Serene bows his head. No doubt you were taught this is why we no longer eat meat, why we tamed the Selah, that the Selah is our wild side, that if we are patient and bring it in, all will be peaceful and plentiful. Yes, Spock says. I never understood that explanation, Serene says. In the story, Serac never brings the Selah and her young into the house. They are in the garden. And they stay there, and then they go and are never mentioned again. It is his kin who need to learn the lesson, who need to learn to live with the way of the world. The Selah has her reasons, her young, her own hunger. How can her young eat the grain? Selah are carnivores before they reach adulthood. Why is the story retold so incorrectly when we are all educated in the high Golic of Serac's time? These are easy questions, and yet we are not encouraged to ask them. He raises his head to look Spock in the eye. Do you understand? No, Spock answers honestly. Serene nods. Correct. Despite ourselves, despite our training, Vulcans love parables. We love to say that it is what it is, and then search for deeper meaning anyway. We are a poetic people, and it is why we have a substantial subpopulation who follow the human religions, the teachings of Buddha and Jesus and Moses, especially. Because the truth is that Serac's tales are not parables. They are hadiths. They are what is. Unfortunate truths. The Selah is not mentioned again in the Hadiths, but Serac's people are. They are the story, the thing we were to learn from, not the hungry beast and her young. At the next feast, they do not eat meat, yes, but the next feast is also before the rains, and that is only a week after the wedding. Without a miracle, there would still be no meat, and the lack of meat is not the story. The understanding and the kindness to the Selah is, Serac did not perform miracles. He teaches us to use our skills to understand the world as it truly is. And that is that both the Selah and the rains come even without sacrifice. He teaches us that we should search for the real reasons for things, not to focus on coincidence or proxy. That is the lesson of the Kadith, not what your father taught you. They sit in silence, and slowly Spock lets go of his knees and lets them fall down into the standard meditation pose. "Spock," Serene says, "why don't you tell me what happened with your parents, your lover, your life the last few years? The story of the Selat says that everything happens, and it is up to us to determine the reason. I am here to work with you. This is the real reason we are here." Spock sits there for a while, completely still. It does not matter. Serene is content to wait for as long as it takes for an answer. If Spock wished for him to leave, he would say so. He does not lack the words. His tongue is loose enough to push him away, but not strong enough yet to bring him in. Serene rises and busies himself lighting the meditation candles and preparing tea in the small kitchen, bringing it back to the table and placing it in the center alongside two cups. Eventually, after 15 long minutes, Spock lifts his head. "You are right about my father," he says, leaning forward. He picks up the teapot and pours the tea into each cup gently, and as the steam rises, he starts talking. Serene leaves his quarters 2 hours later. There is an instruction on his door to go and report to Captain Pike no matter the hour, but Serene ducks into his quarters first. It takes him a mere moment to pull out his private pad and communicator, block the remaining members of the group chat, delete his ComNet account, shut off the pad and communicator, and throw both into the confidential disposal. He waits for the grinding noise to finish before he pulls out the dust and puts those into the normal disposal and watches as they are reclaimed into matter. He then puts on his uniform and heads off to give his report to the captain. Chapter 5. 2 months go by, and Counselor Jelly returns to the Enterprise with a fresh set of pictures of her kittens and a keen desire to retake responsibility for her patients, and they complete a handover over a jug of ice-cold water. "I'm impressed, Mr. Serene," she says as she reviews his notes. "You obviously have a knack for dealing with these emotional humans. Have you given much thought into what you're going to do next? It's a pity you can't stay here. Everyone I've spoken to says they're going to miss you." They are due to reconvene with the USS Charles Upham, a resupply ship that will be returning to Vulcan in a couple of weeks, and Serene has a berth booked for the trip and many messages from his colleagues at Shikar General welcoming him home. "Thank you, Mr. Serene," Mbenga says when he enters his office to say goodbye. "You have been an asset to this department." "Thank you. It has been an honor," Serene says. He puts his hands behind his back and takes a deep breath. "Dr. Mbenga, is there a chance I could perhaps stay?" he asks. Mbenga raises his eyebrows in surprise. "Stay on the Enterprise?" Serene nods. "Yes. You have enough demand to support another counselor on half-time. The other half I could spend continuing my studies. Nurse Chapel has indicated that she has contacts who would support my further training if I were truly interested in neuro rehab." Mbenga puts his hands under his chin. "Are there any specific patients who you would like to have?" "Whoever asks for me," Serene says. "I am here to serve." "Correct answer, you/Serac of Vulcan," Mbenga says slyly, and Serene freezes. "How long have you known?" he asks. Mbenga shrugs and gets up from his chair to come and stand in front of Serene. "We didn't know before you arrived, but someone tipped me off during your first week. It is why we drew out your induction and didn't let you see patients until the Friday. La'an ran a full security check and has basically been stalking you the entire time you've been here.
I did not notice her, Serene says.
Mbenga waves off the comment.
It's something to do with Rigelian tigers. This is the flagship, Mr. Serene. We are the best of the best at what we do.
We have been watching the gossip forums for anything that would indicate you'd access something you shouldn't have. When you didn't seem to be raiding the computer for gossip, we let you see patients. But you were kept at arm's length until we could prove you weren't stealing Spock's private medical data to share with weirdos on the comnet.
Why did you let me treat him? Serene asks.
Mbenga shrugs. It was the captain's prerogative. I will confess I was against it personally. But by that point, we were fairly sure that you were nothing more than a keyboard warrior, and no one can deny that you are a good doctor and one who keeps his oath. The crew likes you. You're a mean Parisi Squares player, and the reorganization means that the intra-fleet competition has got a lot more competitive. So Enterprise needs all the help she can get.
Serene swallows around the question he does not want the answer to. Does Spock know?
Mbenga stands and claps him on the shoulder. Yes, Mr. Serene, he knows. Spock is a better man than most of us. He had already asked if you would be open to remaining with us. We were just waiting for you to ask.
Serene loses the corner office, but while the treatment room he is assigned to is strangely shaped, a long, thin spear carved out between two larger rooms by the nature of the curvature of the hull, but he finds that he does not mind. It is his, and it will be his, for treatment half the time, and the other half shared with Christine as their research office, and that is more than enough. He finishes adjusting the precise layout of the chairs and meditation mats, when there is a chime at the door.
Spock is back in uniform, has shaved off his scruff, and his hair has regained its luster and straightness. His sideburns are sharp and regulation, and it looks good on him. He takes the seat in the office and steeples his hands under his chin. Serene walks around to the other side of the desk, mirrors him, and waits.
How long will this take? Spock asks peevishly. After they have stared at each other for 5 whole minutes.
As long as it takes, Mr. Spock, Serene answers. I have nowhere else to be right now.
Spock sighs, but then starts talking and does not stop. Does not stop, in fact, for nearly 2 whole years.
Sam Kirk's leaving party is a hectic one, taking up the whole of the science lab deck. It is busy, loud, and chaotic, and Serene and Spock had spoken at length about Spock's desire to lock himself in a secure lab for 24 hours to avoid it, but Serene can see him on the other side of the room in conversation with the captain and Una, and he privately takes credit for the way the captain has his hand resting casually in the small of her back.
Hey, someone says to his right.
He turns and looks down to find Chief Kyle standing at his side, radiating nervous energy.
Hello, Mr. Kyle, Serene says, the small talk easy these days. Are you enjoying the party?
Kyle worries his lower lip between his teeth.
You want to maybe get a drink sometime?
Serene looks at his chocolate milk and raises an eyebrow.
I have a drink, thank you.
Kyle grimaces.
I mean, together. On purpose.
Serene looks around and finds a spare cup on the side and pours half of his chocolate milk into it and hands it to Kyle.
There is no point in waiting for some time, Serene explains, when now would be sufficient.
They toast and Kyle looks up at him through his eyelashes and Serene takes a sip and lets the chocolate burst over his tongue and decides to let Spock influence him just a little bit. Serac will understand. 6 months later, the Spock-watching community had mostly forgotten about Serac of Vulcan in favor of the rumors of what ultimately turned out to be someone else with the initials JTK coming out of the Beta Quadrant. A brief but intense thread war had ended in the original community schisming, and while two of the breakaway areas had failed almost immediately, cock watching, a smaller, more informal space, had managed to stay around. The first mention was in the off-topic thread, by far the most lively of the threads, even if the number of participants dwindled week by week. User Shiny Apple. I know we prefer the real thing, but are any of you guys reading BioBedlam? User Tokekla. What's that? User Shiny Apple. It's a story on Wattpad by someone called Queen T'Pol. It's a medical romance set on the Federation flagship. And I swear the author is inspired by Cock. Definitely an old school Spock watcher at the very least. Joshua is so JTK, and she might as well have called Karam Spock. It's almost too much. Either way, it's super good, and I'd love someone to talk about it with. User Kelipa. Link? User Shiny Apple. Here? User Upset Josh Time. Yes! Oh my god, BioBedlam. Totally agree it's by a Spock watcher. The whole subplot with the ship's garden is straight out of the threads from a year ago. Also, the revelations about Josh's secret wife, and that he's a prince, and that he's going to kill the Federation president, and then all this stuff about Karam's mom selling him to people traffickers who turn out to be a Vulcan pop band called Idik. It's so melodramatic, but it's so good. Maybe we should make a node for it? I've already mentioned too many spoilers. User Shiny Apple. Great idea, AQ BioBedlam. The end.